From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
He's pulling away by three. Jorge Chavez and Monarcos have won the Kentucky Derby. And the final time was 1:59.45. He was as fast as Secretariat.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
It's Alidar and Affirm battling back along the inside. We'll test these two to the wire. Affirmed under a left-hand whip. Alidar on the outside driving. Affirmed and Alidar heads apart. Affirm's got a nose in front as they come onto the wire.
The Derby winner, Barnett Bird, closing a late gap. But it is Rachel Alexandra. She's simply above and beyond them. A filly has won the Preakness.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to the Equine Forum presented by Red Brand Fence right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This, of course, the show that launched the entire network, our flagship program, if you will. I'm Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you again for the next couple of hours, and happy to have all of you with me, whether you're tuned in across North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, on our affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country, or if you're listening digitally. And you're doing that at horseracingradio.net. Happy to have you along for the next couple of hours here this morning. You know, we are very blessed here on the network to have listeners in 147 countries throughout the year. I had to go back and double check that. I didn't know there were 147 countries, but it's pretty cool. And so many of us here in the United States and around the world continue to drastically adjust our lifestyles. And for the vast majority of us, that means staying home as much as possible. In horse racing, especially for us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network side of things, this is typically our busiest travel time of the year as we get ready to bring you coverage of all three Triple Crown races. Of course, next week we would be making a trip to Charlestown in West Virginia for the Charlestown Classic. Obviously, none of that is going to happen this spring, so we also find ourselves staying home and trying to cope with ways and deal and adjust to this new lifestyle. And I've seen so many creative ways that people are doing this. I witnessed my first teacher's parade in our neighborhood yesterday. That was really cool. You talk about, and by the way, thank you to all the teachers who continue to do that in difficult times, continue to be there for their students. It's a really special thing. And since we're saying some thank yous, thank you to all the healthcare professionals, to all the first responders, to all of the truckers who are out there. I know many of you listen to this program. Thank you for doing what you're doing under difficult circumstances. Everyone who is showing up at work at essential jobs to help all of us who need to stay home, you know, thank you for everything that you're doing to make this a bit easier for everybody. And because this is the first time in 15 years that we have not had to be on the road and may not be for quite some time, my wife and I decided that this would be the perfect time to do something we've talked about doing for many, many years. So on Wednesday, we welcomed a new addition to our family, a 6.5-week-old Siberian Husky puppy. And if you want to see a picture of him, you can go to our Twitter feed, at HRN, put a picture of the little man and myself getting ready for the show here this morning. Of course, all he wants to talk about is the Iditarod. Can't figure that out. Has no interest in the Kentucky Derby. But we also decided that for the sake of everything, and I mean everything in our house, that we would crate train little Togo. And you can Google that name, by the way, T-O-G-O, Togo, named after a real-life hero, a dog that actually has statues in various parts of the country and in Canada. You can check that out. But for all of you who have had a puppy or are currently training a puppy, and I told my producer, Lee Delapina, as we were coming on the air, I have no idea how he raised a child. Utmost respect to every parent out there. My wife and I don't have kids, so this is our kid. And you know that there are inevitably going to be good nights and bad nights when you have a puppy. And we decided that we were going to crate train little Toga. So on Wednesday night, the first night he was with us, that was pretty good. He slept without a peep until about 4:30 in the morning, and we thought that was a win. On Thursday, it was even better. He didn't wake up until about 5:30. And then right on cue last night, when somebody had to get up and host a radio show on a Saturday morning, little Togo decided to set his alarm for 3:30 a.m. And after briefly hitting snooze, his alarm went off again at full throat at 4:30 in the morning. So if for some reason I should happen to doze off at some point during the show this morning, I hope you'll find a way to forgive me. But I really don't think that's going to happen, because today's guest lineup, and believe me, it's a full slate of guests, promises to keep this show lively and upbeat, and I think you're going to really enjoy it. By the way, today is Togo's official 7-week birthday, so happy birthday, buddy. Typically, this is Arkansas Derby Day, and the Kentucky Derby would normally be 3 weeks away, but instead, the Arkansas Derby has shifted to what would be Derby Day, May 2nd, and we are 147 days, 10 hours, 43 minutes, and 49 seconds away from the Run for the Roses, the first Saturday in September. Now, all eyes are going to be on Oaklawn this afternoon. Yes, there's racing at other tracks, including Gulfstream, for example. But Oaklawn has two stakes races, the only two stakes races that are going to be run in the United States today. Those two stakes races, part of a strong 12-race card. The Oaklawn Mile is race 9. And we see the return of Grade 1 winner Toms d'Etat for Al Stahl and for Gail Benson's GMB Racing. 3-1 morning line favorite. Last year's Kentucky Derby favorite, Improbable, 7-2 on the morning line, is the second choice for Bob Baffert. You also have the Oaklawn Stakes, which is for the 3-year-olds. That's an interesting race, too. Good betting race. Bob Baffert brings 1,000 Words from California, 5-2 favorite on the morning line. That's race number 11. Should be a good one. Steve Asmussen has Basin in there as well. In terms of what we're going to hear from guests this morning, Al Stahl Jr. took the time yesterday on our Weekend Stakes preview show to talk with the Big A, Anthony Stabile, and you're going to hear that interview coming up at right around 8:15 Eastern time this morning. So don't miss Al talking about the return of Grade 1 winner Toms d'Etat. Dustin Fabian from ExpressBet is going to be with me at 8:35. He will handicap those stakes races and preview maybe another race or two on the card that he likes, but certainly those two races will be on the docket when I talk to Dustin at 8:35. At 9 o'clock, I'm going to be joined by Jeff Bloom, the man behind Bloom Racing. He gets set to send out Snapper Sinclair in that Oaklawn Mile. He will also give us an update on his champion filly, Midnight Bisou, and what's going on with her. And Jeff's going to talk to us about the challenges that are facing owners in the sport of thoroughbred racing in these very unusual and uncertain times. You know, you think about the horses that they have in training now, and you say, okay, let's try to find spots. Well, if you have a horse like Midnight Bisou, and there's not many places to run her right now, of course you've got races, if Oaklawn continues to run for another 3 weeks, they have races that she could point to on May 2nd. But if you have horses and you're trying to find spots for those horses, it's becoming obviously increasingly difficult with the travel restrictions. That certainly doesn't help. So you've got to find a way to work those horses in when they're ready to run and do it at the track in the area that you're based. But how about the two-year-olds? This is usually the time of year that we start seeing the two-year-olds make their debuts. Keeneland would normally be in full swing, would have opened last weekend. And you normally start to see these two-year-olds get rolling. Well, if you're an owner and you have two-year-olds in various parts of the country, what do you do with them? I guess you just have to wait. But I'm going to talk to Jeff about that coming up and some of the challenges that owners are dealing with and how they're dealing with them. Talk to him at 9 o'clock Eastern. It was 40 years ago, by the way, that the Great Spectacular Bid capped off a Horse of the Year campaign and champion older male. 40 years ago, 1980, we're going to look back on the bid, 1979 Kentucky Derby winner, with Ed Bowen, the racing historian, formerly with the Jockey Club, now retired. Not retired from being a racing historian, though. He has a plethora of knowledge when it comes to horses like Spectacular Bid. So we'll get a chance to talk to him. He'll share his stories with me about Spectacular Bid, and he'll do that at 9:20 Eastern Time. Our Calling All three-year-old segment, presented by Spendthrift, comes up in the second half of the program, and our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris, also coming up later in this first hour. So as you can tell, it's a very full show. Poll question or question of the day that you can weigh in on. You can do that at HRN on Twitter. I was thinking about this. I was thinking, if you could spend the day, a full day, with one person in racing, it could be anybody. It could be an owner, a trainer, a breeder. It could be a jockey. It could be your favorite radio personality. It could be anybody. If you could spend the day with one person in racing, a full day, who would it be? And I'm going to pass those along later in the program. Just thought that'd be kind of cool, something a little bit different to throw out there to you this morning. But if you could do it, who would that one person be? And look, past or present, let's open it up, past or present. Now, I'm sure people from the past are going to get a lot of guys like Charlie Whittingham and people like that, no doubt about it. But if you could spend the day with one person in racing, who would it be? At HRN on Twitter. You can also do it on Facebook, Horse Racing Radio Network, and you can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net, and let me know who that person would be. All right, going to get to my first break. I will come back and visit, you'll hear from Al Stahl Jr., who visited with Anthony on the Weekend Stakes Preview yesterday afternoon. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA. Thoroughbred owners and trainers know the importance of keeping their horse on schedule, on the track, and injury-free. Even a small injury can result in losing precious time and serious money. That's why farms worldwide trust KeepSafe V-Mesh Fence from Red Brand. The strong mesh design flexes on impact and reduces injuries, keeping your athletes on schedule and on the track. Learn more about KeepSafe V-Mesh Horse Fence at redbrand.com.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
I'm visiting with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how are things in the insurance world?
Things are just fine in the insurance business, Mike. I'm grateful for the people who place their trust in Nicholson Insurance Agency to protect their homes, autos, farms, and horses against financial loss. As you know, we represent many insurance companies, so we can choose just the right company for each client at the right price. We welcome each opportunity to provide quality service to our clients.
So having many companies seems important.
Absolutely. Just like in thoroughbred racing and breeding, competition also works for the betterment of the insurance industry. I am constantly impressed with the ways companies respond to consumer demands with new insurance products and services.
Thanks, Joe. For your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. Or visit us on Facebook. You gotta know Joe.
A social distancing tip.
While the CDC urges you to avoid close contact, like hugging or shaking hands, there are other non-physical ways to say hello. Wave, wink, use sign language, salute, smile, give the peace sign, throw up an air high five, do jazz hands. Remember, stay a minimum of 6 feet or 2 arms length away from others, and stay home if you can. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part. Because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
This is Al Stahl, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Red Brand Fence.
Tom's Data decisively from fourth and now third and now second. And coming up on the outside as they come off the turn, Mr. Freeze has to fend off Tom's Data, who's rallied to the front with 3/16 to go. Mr. Freeze is battling on, though. Major Cabby's farther back in third. Owendale trying to weave through the pack with Draft Pick. There's 1 furlong to go. Tom's Data's got a 4-length lead at the 16th pole. Mr. Freeze trying to hold for second, but Tom's Data has conquered the Clark. Wrapped up in the end to win it by three. It's tight for second. Owendale came flying late to photo with Mr. Freeze. Draft pick was fourth.
Tom's d'etat, big win in the Clark handicap. Travis Stone with the call, and Tom's d'etat back in action later this afternoon in the Oaklawn Mile. He is the morning line favorite in that race, and the Grade 1 winner figures to be pretty tough, but, you know, his 2020 debut, we'll see what happens for Al Stahl Jr. Al did take time to visit with Anthony Stabile yesterday in our Weekend Stakes preview show, and he talked about Tom's d'etat, and here's what Al had to say.
Down at Oaklawn tomorrow, that's where all the stakes action will be in the United States tomorrow. And nice enough to join us now is the man who's going to saddle what I would think would be the shortest price on that Oaklawn Park card, certainly in the stakes races. It's Al Stahl Jr. He has Tom's d'etat making his 2020 debut in the Oaklawn Mile. Al, it's Anthony and Bobby Newman here on the Weekend Stakes Preview presented by Naira Betts. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Okay, guys. Thanks for having me.
We've had some guys and gals on during the week, Al, and Mark Hennig on Wednesday. Mark's birthday, by the way. Happy birthday to Mark. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, you and I were talking yesterday when we were setting this interview up, just about some of the different things you've encountered with this COVID-19 outbreak and how you've had to make some changes to how you operate and to your vast operation.
Well, the main thing we've adjusted to is just the closings. Fairgrounds knocked off the last week, and Keeneland canceling, obviously, Derby week canceled. So those are the mental adjustments. And as a result of those closings, some of the backsides haven't opened like they normally do. Sometimes we have stalls at Keeneland, and we're planning on shipping in there, and we couldn't do that, obviously. And Churchill has picked a date that my gut and, you know, I guess everybody, word on the street, and everybody's following the same numbers. Unfortunately, the COVID numbers that we're thinking the 28th is going to be the day. And, we're just lucky that the fairgrounds has kept the racetrack open and all those horses are there right now that'll go to various tracks. But I'd have to say a high percentage of them, I couldn't tell you the number of horses or help, which is more important than anything, will be going up to Churchill, but there's a lot. I'd have to say 400-plus horses, maybe 500-plus horses, will go from New Orleans straight into Churchill. So at least we can train and keep our horses moving. And I've been very fortunate that my owners – I haven't had an owner blink an eye yet. Here I am sending them a big fat bill every week, every month, and trying to – you know, we try and do what we can to tighten things down, but salaries are salaries and feed is feed, and those numbers don't really change whether we're running for purse money or not. So, but I've been fortunate, and everybody's been patient, and my crew's been healthy. And so, you know, we've made minor adjustments here and there, and I'm certainly not going to trim anybody off the payroll. That's just not going to happen. And I'll just, if a guy takes care of four horses, and he's rubbing two or three, and he's going to get his salary. And when we get all settled in Kentucky, I can get some of the younger horses in, and he'll be back up to his normal workload and things like that. So, we're just basically doing most probably everybody's doing, being patient and listening to the people who know quite a bit more than we do.
You mentioned about just, you know, keeping everybody going as best you can and trying to do business as usual, if you will. But obviously it's not business as usual to the point where you're running the big horse in the barn and you're not going to be able to be at Oaklawn tomorrow.
Right. Well, that's we've kind of known that for a while. I mean, if you're going to train in New Orleans, and actually I've recently shifted myself up to Kentucky, and I'll get everything ready here, but you know, in theory, I'm still in the 14-day quarantine period coming out of Orleans Parish, or I guess basically the state of Louisiana. So, actually, the last time I laid eyes on Tom's d'etat was probably was 2.5 weeks ago. So it's kind of nerve-wracking because I've been with him almost 365 since he was you know, since he was a 2-year-old, besides, you know, being at farms and stuff. So Chelsea Cody has taken over. You might know Chelsea. She's married to Curtis, the photographer with the bow tie, photographer to the stars at Churchill and Oaklawn. And she's a great horse person. And he's done extremely well before he left New Orleans. And she's a top-of-the-line rider, and she's given me, you know, the double thumbs up every day. Joe Talamo was nice enough to blow the horse out for us a little bit. He called me, and you would have thought you were talking to someone just won the lottery. He was so excited. So the way the horse went. So we feel good about our horse, and our setup's in good shape. And, you know, I don't have a grade one couch like Bob Baffert, but maybe I'll have a Oaklawn Mile couch like, you know, tomorrow.
Al, this is Bobby Newman. Tom's Day Tot was always a really good horse. He showed that he was a great horse last year, winning 3 stakes on the year, including back-to-back graded stakes. He won the Grade 2 Fayette at Keeneland. He won the Grade 1 Clark when we last saw him at the end of November at Churchill. Joel Rosario reunited with him. The last 4 times Joel has ridden this horse for you, he's not only won, but won pretty impressively. Is this the kind of thing where do you need to give Joel instructions, or does he know exactly what to do when riding Tom's Day Tot?
Yeah, no, he's you know, Joel is the type of rider, he's instinctive. Everybody, you know, you'll read on Twitter how well Rosario was way back. He was, you know, sometimes he's on the lead, sometimes he's back, sometimes he's just an instinctive rider, which I like. That's what I want out of a rider personally. Something might not go right one race, but in general, anybody who just kind of trusts themselves that much and puts them where they think they need to be, that's the kind of rider that I want. So obviously, I won't be there, and I won't even talk to him. And Chelsea will just say good luck, and he knows what to do. He gets him away from the pony and warms him up on his own. And he's a very big horse, but he'll, you know. In general, he leaves the gate really well. I mean, his first jump is right there with all the speed horses. So hopefully that happens tomorrow, being a fresh horse and not a rusty horse. So we'll see how that goes. But both of them are on their own tomorrow, horse and rider.
Talking with trainer Al Stahl Jr. He has Tom's Day Tot, the favorite in the Oaklawn Mile tomorrow afternoon down in Hot Springs, Arkansas at Oaklawn Park. So, you know, you talked about your gut feeling about Churchill Downs opening, Al, and this and that. What do you do with a horse like Tom's Day Tot, who you've spaced his races, bringing him back as a full horse at the age of 7? What do you do going forward? Do you have a plan in your head? I know there's no schedule, there's no set races, but do you know how you'd like to try to get him maybe to the Breeders' Cup this year, even though we're talking about early April?
Well, you know, not really. If we can hit – the reason Tom's Day Tot had such a good year, like Bobby said, towards the end of the year, turned into like a great horse, was he found a rhythm finally. There was so much stopping and going – you know, whether it'd been a time off or he's actually had a few surgeries, but he finally got his rhythm where he could do something on a daily basis and give himself a chance to improve, and was getting a lot out of his racing. So that's why he ended up where he was, and he's had a very good winter. And the funny thing is, about December 1st, early December, you know, we've decided to forget about Dubai and Saudi and the Pegasus, and we were wanting to run our home track, you know, for the Breeders' Cup at Keeneland. We were backing up from there, and we were thinking, oh, maybe the New Orleans Handicap. No, maybe the Ben Ally got canceled. Maybe Alashiba canceled. We could run maybe in this race and run in the Pimlico Special. Canceled. the Stephen Foster is usually in mid-June, and I didn't hear anything about no rumors. I missed all those memos, and I read a month or two ago, boom, it's closing day at Churchill instead of in mid-June. So, I mean, everything changed from what my original plan was in my mind in early December. So if we can get to, you know, just get through race by race, but if we can get to the Foster, we can play out the rest of the year from there. That's if Saratoga, you know, goes and things like that. So it's really hard to, but if we can make it to Churchill Racing in June and the Foster's closing night or day or whatever it is at Churchill, we can make a plan from there. And obviously the next race would be the Whitney if possible, you know, so I'm not worried about that in the least. I'm not panicked about a schedule. I'm just thrilled to death to have a horse who is where I want him to be, if that makes any sense.
Sure, it certainly does, and I'm sure it has to help that he's had some success, a lot of success, actually, up at Saratoga.
Oh, gosh, yeah. He's a Saratoga horse, and so if we can get there in good shape, he does well anyway. A racehorse is good anyway, but I mean, now he's getting his chance, and so we're just, you know, we feel good. If you look at his form, after his maiden, we had a problem, and he had a long layoff, and his one other than, he got very close to the track record, and his one other than at the fairgrounds, you know, and then we had another problem, and I want to say the day after Breeders' Cup at Churchill, he ended up off the turf, flat mile race, hadn't run in like 16 months maybe, and he ran a mile of 34-4. You know, those are races. I mean, he ran great off the bench, and that's coming off problems. You know, we haven't had a problem during the winter. We just freshened him by design. So that's why, you know, I'm really excited to see, you know, what he does tomorrow and going forward, because there's been no catch-up. There's been no rehab. It's just been regular horse training, which is doesn't happen too often in this game, but here we are.
Al, before we let you go, almost 10 years since Blame. Can you believe it's been that long?
Oh, I know it. Believe me, I'm ready for another one. Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of things have happened since then, but it's so good to see he's acting just like, almost identical to his sire, Arch. He's having a strong resurgence or a strong few years as a stallion with Nadal, and so you know we're I'm as proud of him now as I was when he was running in big races.
Al, going back to that Breeders' Cup Classic, it felt like the entire world was rooting for Zenyatta to get to Blame in the stretch. Did you feel like a villain at all? When they put that official sign up and when Blame held on?
Well, you know, the funny thing is, when you're focused on your horse, I don't say I missed all that, but I was a little bit surprised by when starting of Derby week, when she flew in from California and my barn is up against that fence that faces Longfield Avenue and Fourth. And all of a sudden, I'm seeing like cars stopping, like there was a traffic jam. I was like, "What is all that about?" And oh, Zenyatta's coming from the airport. I was like, "Wow, okay." and then when she'd be out in that patch of grass grazing, and people would be on that fence, and the traffic would be stopped, and I was like, "Well, this is a little bit bigger than I thought." But we were just singularly focused on our horse, and we were very happy with how he was doing. And walking over, you know, I knew where the crowd was at that point in time, and that paddock scene was just like out of control. I gave Garrett Gomez a leg up. We were number five, and I was trying to back away from the rest of the horses coming, you know, 6 through 14. And when I tell you, there were people, mostly women, pushing me out the way, wouldn't let me. I couldn't find an inch to stand on because they had their cameras out. They wanted to see Zenyatta, so I kind of just literally was almost ducking to get out of the way after I'd already legged up the jock, and then we were just thinking about the race, and things turned out, you know, so well, and I heard that the grandstand was extremely quiet, but our little pocket there down the winner's circle was not quiet. Seemed like, you know, half the city of New Orleans was down there with us, not to mention the Hancock family and, you know, a lot of their people. So, you know, I didn't pay too much attention to that. I didn't notice that because, you know, adrenaline doesn't even describe. If you could bottle how I felt, we'd all be rich. So it was a little bit, but nothing. It was not intimidating by any stretch of the imagination. It just caught me off guard.
Al, great stuff. He's ready for another one, HRN Nation. Is Tom's d'etat the other one? 10 years after Blame took the Breeders' Cup Classic, maybe Tom's d'etat gets Al Stahl back to that winner's circle. Al, thanks for some time. Best of luck tomorrow and going forward. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Tom.
Okay, my pleasure, thanks, guys. Al. Thank you.
All right, Al Stahl with Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman on the Weekend Stakes Preview Show presented by Naira Betts. That was yesterday. And my thanks again to Al Stahl Jr. for taking the time to do that interview with those guys. Wanted to make sure I brought that your way again on the Equine Forum in case you missed it, because Al was so candid. One thing I love about Al Stahl, he's always so good about recognizing all the other people that are involved with making the horse a success. Certainly Al is the one at the head of the class, and he's the boss, he's the one calling the shots, but he mentioned Chelsea, he mentioned Joe Talamo and how he was kind enough to get aboard, and all of the different ways that a horse can be successful, it takes a village, and Al recognizes that. He's always very good about that, and that's pretty cool. Not a straw in his path. It's just been regular horse training for Tom's d'etat since that win in the Grade 1 Clark last year. We'll see how he fares later today in the Oaklawn Mile. And by the way, nice shout-out to Curtis Cody, photographer to the stars, as he said. Love it. Curtis, really, really nice guy. And Cody Photography, they do a fantastic job. Dustin Fabian from Express Bet is going to be with me next to handicap the big races at Oaklawn, the Oaklawn Mile, the Oaklawn Stakes. That comes up in just about 5-6 minutes. But time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus Store of Lexington. Quick reminder, their showroom might be closed at the Lexus Store, but the service area still open. So if you need something, give them a call. They will take care of you. The people, they make the difference at the Lexus Store of Lexington. This is your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
On Sunday afternoon, October 28, 1973, 40,000-plus fans turned out at Toronto's Woodbine Racecourse in somewhat less than auspicious weather to witness the 36th renewal of one of North America's premier racing events. It was the Canadian International Championship Stakes over 1 5/8 miles on the grass. The object of all the attention in the race was the Meadow Stables Secretariat, who'd amassed a record of 15 wins and 20 starts going into the event. He was the American Triple Crown winner, having been the first to accomplish that feat since Citation in 1948, had set 3 track records, a course record, and 2 world records, and he was unscathed on the greenery. He had been Horse of the Year at 2 and was being mentioned in the same breath as the legendary Man of War in terms of ability. There was a genuine feeling of excitement surrounding his appearance in the International. His owner, Penny Tweedy, and his conditioner, Lucien Lauren, had selected this race over the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe, the Jockey Club Gold Cup, and the Washington, D.C. International for this particular start. On this championship day, people were lined up 3 deep along every path he took to catch but a fleeting glimpse of this marvelous thoroughbred who had been bemonikered Big Red, the same as the aforementioned Man of War. There were 11 other horses entered in the race, which brought the net worth to the winner to a rather tidy $92,000+. The reasons for the competition were, first, that Secretariat's regular rider, Ronnie Turcotte, was not to be in the saddle. He had received a 5-day suspension in New York, which precluded his availability as reinsman aboard Big Red. Eddie Maple drew the riding assignment, and he had been accustomed to riding Reva Ridge, Secretariat's stablemate. Secondly, the turf at Woodbine was softer and more dense than at Belmont, where Secretariat had great success on the grass. At post time, the weather conditions turned abominable, from a slight drizzle to a light sleet. Late on that Sunday afternoon, Kennedy Road went on out to set the early fractions and continued in the van after the first mile, setting fractions of 47-2 for the half, 137-3 for the mile. That was all she wrote, so to speak. Secretariat, the big golden chestnut, was set down by Maple and literally exploded in typical Secretariat fashion, zooming to the front going into the last of 3 turns. He led by 3, then by 4, then by 6, and then by 12 open lengths, leaving a totally demolished quality field of thoroughbreds in his wake. At the furlong marker, Maple eased up on the big colt and allowed him to waltz home the easiest kind of winner by 6 open lengths in a final time of 2:44.4, that time being only 4 ticks off the track record, and this in spite of being eased up, so to speak, at the end. With a 92,000-plus winner share of the purse, he pushed his career earnings to a new all-time single-season mark of $860,000 and surpassed the great Damascus's mark in so doing. He also became the 4th greatest money winner of all time, trailing only Kelso, Roundtable, and Buckpasser. It all happened on a meteorically, so to speak, miserable day before 40,000-plus racing fans at Woodbine in Canada, Sunday, October 18th or 28th, 1973, in the Canadian International. A truly great performance and indeed a great moment in thoroughbred racing.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Time-tested Broken Vow continues to deliver quality black-type stakes horses at a 15% clip. The top son of Unbridled has sired over 150 black-type horses, 80 black-type winners, and over $75 million in earnings. Among the 12 black-type horses sired by Broken Vow in 2019 was dual Canadian Classic winner Tone Broke, winner of classic races on dirt and turf. Also the sire of Imprimis, the Speedy Keeneland graded stakes winner of over $440,000. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Airdrie Stud is proud to announce the arrival of Grade 1 winning millionaire Preservationist. The exceptionally talented son of Arch boasts Foundation mares Courtly D and Manad on the top and bottom of his blue-blooded pedigree. On the racetrack, he was one of 2019's best, taking the Grade 1 Woodward at Saratoga and Historic Suburban at Belmont Park.
And Preservationist has won the Suburban by 4.5 lengths over Catholic Boy and Pebble.
Preservationist, another exciting addition to the Airdrie Stud Stallion roster. Think about it.
Get to know the men and women who make this sport go on Trainer Talk, presented by Facig Tipton. Mike Penna sits down with Hall of Famers, up-and-comers, and everyone in between with an intimate conversation that goes beyond the X's and O's. Hear their stories every Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern on Sirius 219 XM 201 or streaming live at horseracingradio.net. It's the show that trainers listen to. Trainer Talk, presented by Facig Tipton, only on HRRN.
Hi, I'm Richard Migliori, and I love listening to Horse Racing Radio Network. Good night, Barbados.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
1,000 words awaiting his turn. He's traveling very nicely at this point, has 2 to make up. We'll wait for room. Encoder has 7 lengths to find, and then it's Zimbo Warrior. They turn for home. High velocity, 1,000 words looking for room now inside. Tis a Magician. They're a furlong from the finish. 1,000 words, length and stride. Has to get to high velocity. High velocity, 1,000 words. Royal Act running a big race on the outside, and Tis a Magician. 1,000 words just in front. Here's Royal Act on the outside. 1,000 words. 1,000 words wins to Robert B. Lewis. And Bob Baffert with another incredible milestone. 3,000 North American wins.
Huge win for Bob Baffert. There's been plenty of those in his career. Big, big win for 1,000 words in the Robert B. Lewis Stakes. That was Frank Miramati with the call, Santa Anita, back on February 1st. As we know, 1,000 words would return to finish 4th behind another Baffert trainee, Authentic, in the Grade 2 San Felipe. He's looking for redemption and to get back to the winner's circle later today in the Oaklawn Stakes, and that will be race number 11 on the 12-race program in Hot Springs, Arkansas. Joined now by Dustin Fabian from ExpressBet to help break down that race and the Oaklawn Mile as well, which is race number 9. Good card at Oaklawn. And Dustin, appreciate the visit here this morning.
Yeah, Mike, I appreciate you having me on. And, you know, I think you almost did an understatement by calling it a great card, because it's a handicapper's dream.
Yeah, especially, you know, in this time when things aren't normal, to say the least, to have a program like this. I said the same thing on Florida Derby Day, where that was a rock-solid program at Gulfstream Park. To have a card like this where you can sit home, all of us who love horse racing can sit home, download the BristNet PPs or whatever it might be that you handicap with, and sit there and bet these races and good races. You know, thank goodness that these racetracks are doing this.
Yeah, you know what? I couldn't agree more. And I think before we get into, you know, have the opportunity to have this conversation, you have to thank the men and women at these tracks who are still putting on the show. You know, obviously, none of this would be possible without their hard work. And similarly, I think you have to also recognize the men and women working at the tracks that, you know, unfortunately had to shut down. They may not get, you know, as much credit as the folks at Gulfstream or the folks at Oaklawn, but they're working just as hard without the payoff in the afternoon. So, you know, for me and for the ExpressBet team and for our FirstBet team, we really just tip our cap to those folks. And like I said, we wouldn't be having this conversation without them. So, you know, all the credit to what they're doing.
Yeah, very well said. And I'll echo those sentiments as well. And Dustin, you bring up FirstBet. This is something that some people may be hearing about for the very first time. I was introduced to it when we were down in Florida for the Pegasus World Cup at Gulfstream Park. It's a neat, neat idea, and the app is really cool. Tell people a little bit about what FirstBet is.
No, I appreciate you giving me the time, and I appreciate, you know, you saying giving your endorsement. Essentially, what FirstBet is, it's a new betting and handicapping product from ExpressBet. The top of our organization down, we have been committed to the sport of horse racing and committed to really taking some of the complexity out of handicapping and creating a product that gives everyone, whether you're beginner betting the races for the first time or a professional handicapper, another tool to pick winners. And what we've done is we've created an app. It's called FirstBet. And it utilizes some AI-assisted big data handicapping engine. And, you know, for those of us out there that don't know what that means, because when that was pitched to me, I said, that sounds great, but what does that do? And, you know, what FirstBet really utilizes is we have a library of hundreds of thousands of past races. And we'll look at a race, you know, on today's card at Oaklawn, for example, and we'll instantly compare today's race to races in the library that match it. So similar class, similar field size, same surface, stuff like that. And then, you know, instantly we'll go into that library and our computers that are, you know, incredibly powerful will take a look and they'll say, hey, in races like this, these were the most important factors to winning. So maybe it was the fastest horse, maybe it was the best jockey, maybe it was the best trainer. You know, we have over 50 data points that we use, that we evaluate on, and then instantly, you know, we'll spit out, hey, based on how this race has gone in the past, here are the horses that you should bet today, and we'll provide win, place, and show percentages for each of those horses. And I ran the numbers for the some of these Arkansas races, and they came back pretty interesting, but you know, best thing you can do, if that sounds interesting to you, if you're an ExpressBet customer already, just download the FirstBet app in the App Store, or if you're on an Android, just go to firstbet.com. That's 1stbet.com. Log in with your ExpressBet credentials. Check it out. If you're not a customer yet, you can go to first.com/bets. That's, again, 1st.com. And we'll hook you up with a $10 instant bonus just for signing up, and then a 10% rebate over your first 30 days up to $500. So the same sign-up bonus on ExpressBet and FirstBet. Use promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, to get started. And, you know, we think it's a really cool product. We're still, you know, rolling it out. We're still taking feedback from our customers, listening to what they want, updating constantly. But it's really exciting. And for me, it's kind of the next wave of wagering, the next wave of handicapping. And it's just, it's a lot of power to have in the palm of your hand when you're betting the races.
Yeah, it's something completely different than what we've seen traditionally when it comes to handicapping products. So one more time, I'll remind people that if you're looking for that particular app, or if you're not an ExpressBet customer, you can go sign up. You can do that through our website as well. But the 1ST is the way you're looking for first. It's not spelled F-I-R-S-T. It's 1ST, bet, first bet. And it's a cool thing that ExpressBet has put together. So go check it out. I'm visiting, by the way, with Dustin Fabian from ExpressBet here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Dustin, let's talk about the two races at Oaklawn and see if First Bet has any tie-ins to these two. You said it made it somewhat interesting. The Oaklawn Mile is race number 11, obviously 1 mile on the main track, purse of $150,000, big field, and Tom's d'Etat, who we just heard from Al Stahl Jr. in the previous segment, is going to be most likely the favorite in that race.
Yeah, you know, I really appreciated the interview with Al Stahl. I love Tom's d'Etat in this race. It's kind of one of those nice circumstances where I like the horse and First Bet likes the horse. I ran the numbers on First Bet, and when they spit out the probable win percentages for this race, it was, you know, Tom's d'Etat by a significant margin, followed by Mr. Money, and then pretty much nobody else other than those two was getting a lot of attention from the app. I love Tom's d'Etat. I think, frankly, any of the last six races this horse has run would probably win today. You always have to be a little concerned about layoffs and coming back at Oaklawn, just because he's never run here before. But this horse is just such a cool customer. Great fit with Joel Rosario. I think he has the ability to send if they're going slowly, but, you know, with some speed in this race, Rosario can really sit back, bide his time, and just, you know, hopefully the seas part for him, and he's able to kick clear. Mr. Money was the only other horse I really gave a lot of attention to on the win angle, but, you know, my real concern with Mr. Money, just looking at this race, is he's never really drawn inside and run a really strong race from an inside post. He's breaking from the two hole here. And, you know, when he was reeling off victories last summer, he was always drawn mid pack to out. So now I think he's going to have to overcome some ground or some experience issues coming from an inside post. And he's going to have to work out a trip, which is going to be a little uncharted for him. So, curious to see how Mr. Money does in his first start of the year, but I think Tom's d'Etat is really the horse you want to bet here, and probably pair him with some of the longer shots in your exactas, trifectas, superfectas.
Yeah, very astute observation on Mr. Money and his performances from last year. And much like Tom's d'Etat, he is making his 2020 debut. It will be his four-year-old debut after finishing seventh in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile in his most recent outing at Santa Anita on November 2nd. Dustin, let's move on to the Oaklawn Stakes for the three-year-olds. And I love to give the countdown to the Kentucky Derby. And now I have another 147 days, 10 hours, 1 minute, and 20 seconds to do so. So tell me about the three-year-olds going in the Oaklawn Stakes.
You know, I think as we were coming into the segment, you obviously played the footage of Thousand Words winning the Robert Lewis, and I thought that was apropos. Like I said, ran the numbers on First Bet coming into this. First Bet likes three horses in here quite a bit. Likes Thousand Words, gives Thousand Words the highest chance of winning, right around 25%. Second pick on First Bet was actually the six horse Shoplifted at 20%, and then number one Basin was 19%. So Shoplifted and Basin really close in the stats. Personally, you know, as I was looking at this race, I do want to try to take the chance to beat Thousand Words. Coming out of those California races, I think that, you know, when when he won the Robert Lewis, that field might not have been that deep. When he won the Los Al Futurity, frankly, I thought that he was maybe the second best horse that day, but Blaine Wright's and ODR just didn't really want to pass horses, especially at that point of his career. Going back to that Robert Lewis, horse he beat by less than a length, Royal Act, came back in the Louisiana in one of the fairgrounds races and just didn't run very well. I mean, obviously more factors go into it than that, but just you'd have liked to have seen a better performance from Royal Act in Louisiana. So I'm looking at Basin. I think Basin ran a solid race first off the layoff. He kind of got stuck in that Nadal race where they went crazy fast early. Accession came flying. Basin just kind of ran an in-between race that day, kind of sat mid-pack and just kind of stayed there. And, frankly, for his first race in six-plus months, that wasn't a bad performance by any stretch. I like the fact that they switched to Florent Giroux today. He gets the rail. That tells me that he's going to, the way Florent Giroux's been riding, he's probably going to activate this horse early, get him in the first flight. I would expect him to be sitting up to first, no worse than third or fourth going into the first turn. And I think he's going to get jump on a horse like Thousand Words, who just seems to need a little more time to get the motor running. Shoplifted, like I said, First Bet likes him a lot. I'm not as sold. I think he's a trifecta, a superfecta, fill out at best. The other horse that really jumped out at me was Tayshaun. And, I think you can use Tayshaun and Basin pretty aggressively here. I thought Tayshaun's last race at Oaklawn in the slop was phenomenal. Now, he's going to – whether or not he gets a rainy track today is to be determined. Looks like there's some rain that may come later, so we'll keep an eye on that. But this is just a horse that wants to be forwardly placed. The two times he's been really forwardly placed, he's drawn off to win. He's beat some nice horses. When he broke his maiden, he beat Tiz a Magician, who's been a nice horse out in California. So I think that, Tayshaun, given a good trip with Rosario in the irons, I think is going to have a big shot. And it's him and Basin for me, using Thousand Words underneath with horses like, maybe a Digital or something underneath as well could play a role, with the outside horses, Farmington Road stuck in the 12. I think it's just going to be so difficult for any of these jockeys who are stuck outside to work out a trip that you really want to focus on the inside horses in both of these races and just kind of acknowledge that the outside horses are there. They could beat you, but they're going to have so much trouble finding a trip that you want to focus on horses drawn eight or in probably is the best case.
All right, Dustin Fabian with ExpressBet here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Basin 7-2 on the morning line, and Tayshaun 8-1. So some value there in the Oaklawn Stakes. Listen, Dustin, appreciate the visit here this morning. All the best. Make sure you're staying healthy, and we'll encourage everybody to head over to ExpressBet.com to bet all the big races coming up later today at Oaklawn. And if they haven't checked out the First Bet app, they need to do that too, and they can do that through ExpressBet. So appreciate the visit, buddy, and stay safe.
You too, Mike. Happy to come on anytime. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, and Dustin Fabian, like all of our guests who appear on the program, is going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Hey, you're sitting at home, you're looking for that perfect gift for the horse racing fan on your list, why not head over to EmbraceTheRace.com and check it out and embrace your passion and wear what you love at EmbraceTheRace.com. When I come back, it's your industry star of the week, very special industry star on this Saturday morning, and then I'll get you set for hour number two. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown.
Power.
Anchor Down has built a 5-length lead with just a 16th to the finish. Anchor Down wins the Westchester.
Passion.
Anchor Down is still there coming to the 16th pole. Tamar Coase can't get by him. And Anchor Down wires the field in the Kelso.
Performance.
Gainsway Stallion Anchor Down.
a son of three-time champion sire Tappet and a top miler who won the Grade 2 Kelso with a final time of 132 and 4 fifths, posting a 108 buyer speed figure. A half-brother to Grade 1 winner Sweet Lulu, Anchor Down strongly resembles his sire, and buyers agree. At the recently concluded OBS March sale, a two-year-old colt by Anchor Down breezed in 9 4/5 seconds, selling for $270,000 to John Ford. Brilliantly fast, Anchor Down, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Top of the stretch. On the inside is Majesto in third. Nyquist has moved away. Mohamed has no answer today. On the inside is Majesto. And then comes Fellowship. Nyquist drifting out to the center of the track. But he's far in front. And Nyquist is still unbeaten. He has won the Florida Derby.
4 years ago, Nyquist stamped himself as the favorite for the Kentucky Derby with that impressive win in the Florida Derby. It was his fourth career Grade 1 victory, and that performance makes Nyquist your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Nyquist, an Eclipse champion at 2 when he won 3 Grade 1s, including the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Nyquist was the leading first crop sire at the yearling sales in 2019 by both average and median, and his first crop are 2-year-olds of 2020. Learn more about Nyquist and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
My name is Abel Escanos. Listen to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Hour number two coming up in just a few minutes kicks off with Jeff Bloom of Bloom Racing talking about Snapper Sinclair going to the post at Oaklawn later today. He'll also give us an update on Midnight Bizou. Going to look back on 1980 Horse of the Year. Yeah, 40 years ago, spectacular bid. The 1979 Kentucky Derby winner. We'll do that at 9:20 Eastern with Ed Bowen, racing historian, formerly with the Jockey Club. And then I'll update the poll question here in the second half of the program. Still to come, too, our Calling All 3-Year-Old segment with Bobby Newman, presented by Spendthrift. But it's time now for your Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. And don't forget that Stuart offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. And he wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows that his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, and Malagasy, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at every major sale coming up later this summer and fall. Well, I told you this was a special Industry Star of the Week, and typically I will either play a pre-recorded piece of an interview for you, or I will have somebody come on live, as I did last week on this program. But this week, I thought it was important to recognize a couple of organizations, and an individual, by the way, doing great work here in the Lexington community in spite of very challenging times. So this week's Industry Star of the Week is Keeneland and Thoroughbred owner Craig Burnick. They are co-Industry Stars of the Week for a program that is called Nourish Lexington. And if you haven't heard of it, this is just fantastic what they are doing. It's an initiative that utilizes the skills of hospitality workers who are recently unemployed because of all the COVID-19 closings. And what they do is they hire these individuals to help prepare and deliver meals. And the food service workers receive a $60 payment for a 4-hour shift, so $15 an hour, and the meals are distributed to hospitality industry families and anyone in the community here in Lexington that's in need of a hot meal. And you know, with the Keeneland meat, Keeneland's obviously a huge economic driver of the Lexington hospitality community. And Nourish Lexington provides these vital needs to this community in the form of the financial support for the displaced members of the hospitality community who are now working and receiving payment for providing the meals, as well as the fellow members of the community who are receiving the meals. So there's a couple of sides to this, and it's just such a wonderful program. And one thing that they've realized since launching the program this past week is that not only was it extremely well received, but in some ways it's also bittersweet. They realized that there's this overwhelming need in our community here in Lexington and that they have to find a way to do more. But this is certainly helping so many people. So hats off to Keeneland and to Craig Burnick. The Thoroughbred owner is a founding investor in Nourish Lexington. He's extremely passionate about this cause. He continues to support it. Craig's family foundation, the Lavin Family Foundation, also provided funding to provide lunches for children in the Fayette County Public School System during spring break when free lunches were not provided by the school system. And in addition to supporting the efforts that I just talked about, Keeneland Hospitality and Keeneland Kitchens are providing hundreds of meals every single week to support the efforts of Nourish Lexington. So hats off. I mean, what a wonderful program this is, and very deserving of being our industry star of the week. Keeneland and Thoroughbred owner Craig Burnick here on the Equine Forum. If you want to learn more, by the way, you can go to nourishlexington.org. That's nourishlexington.org. You can learn how to receive meals and sign up to work, make donations. You can do it all right there through the website. So congratulations, guys. Keep up the great work. And, yeah, wonderful stuff. Our industry star of the week, Keeneland and Craig Burnick. Going to come back with hour number two right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Victory Gallop is still third, but he's coming real quiet. Is a bit leg weary. Victory Gallop is trying. Here's the line. Real Quiet wins the 124th running of the Kentucky Derby.
This is unbelievable. Zenyatta, what a performance. One we'll never forget. Looked impossible.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
On the inside, unaccounted for. On the outside, Sullivan.
Here's Mike Penna.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you from my home studio, whereas my producer Lee Delapina is in our main studio here in Lexington, practicing, of course, safe social distancing. Hope everyone is staying safe and healthy out there as we continue to adjust our lives to deal with COVID-19. And my thanks to all of our guests in the first half of the program. If you missed any portion of the show, just head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out this show and all of our shows there at horseracingradio.net. Al Stahl Jr., that interview from yesterday's Weekend Stakes preview, I played that for you in the first half of the program. And Dustin Fabian from ExpressBet handicapping the big stakes races at Oaklawn Park today. All of that part of a very busy first half of the program. Second half is going to kick off with my good friend and colleague, Jeff Bloom of Bloom Racing. He'll be with me here in just a moment. Ed Bowen will be with me at 9:20 Eastern to look back on the career and tell some stories about the great spectacular bid who 40 years ago, 1980, was Horse of the Year and Champion Older Male. And then, of course, our Calling All Three-Year-Olds presented by Spendthrift. Several responses coming into our question of the day at HRN on Twitter. The question of the day is, if you could spend one full day with one person in racing, who would it be? One full day with one person in racing, who would it be? And it can be past or present. It could be anybody. Can be an owner, trainer, jockey, breeder. I told you, your favorite radio personality. That joke didn't go over so well in the first half of the show. I figured I'd try it again. But can be anybody that you want to spend the day with. Let us know at HRN on Twitter. And I'm going to pass along many of those answers later in the second half of the show. Jeff Bloom is sitting at his home in Dallas, Texas, whereas Snapper Sinclair is at Oaklawn Park in Arkansas, getting ready to compete in today's Oaklawn Mile. Jeff, good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Mr. Penna. How are you?
I'm well. You know, I was going to chime in on the poll question and put your name down as the one person I'd like to spend the day with, but I've spent plenty of days with you, and I there's no way in hell I'm doing it again.
It kind of just goes without saying anyways, though, doesn't it, Mike? So you can, like, take my name off as an obvious, and then it makes it easier.
Yeah, you're not kidding. Hey, look, boy, what challenging times. Let's start there, Jeff, because you would normally be at Oaklawn Park right now. It has to be killing you to be sitting at home having to watch these races on TV.
Well, all of this is just incredibly surreal in terms of the significant and dramatic changes and the disruption to everybody's, forget about work lives, but just lives in general. I mean, I think once you get over the initial shock of, well, things have changed and our normal way of doing business, you know, in terms of going to the auctions and the races and all that, becomes less important as just trying to get past this incredible and damaging sickness that's taken over the world. But you're right. Most likely I would be over there at Oaklawn getting excited to see Snapper Sinclair perform. But fortunately, they're running at Oaklawn, and we get to watch it on TV.
Yeah, I mean, there is a silver lining in that respect. There's no doubt about it. Snapper Sinclair, last time out, second in the Essex Handicap at Oaklawn. That was on March 14th over a sloppy racetrack. He always seems to be knocking on the door, Jeff. What's it going to take to get over that hump here today?
Well, if he does it today, he's probably doing it in arguably the toughest spot he's ever been in. I mean, because of the limited race options for horses, we ended up with what is essentially the Breeders' Cup level type race and a listed stake today in the Oaklawn Mile. Love this horse, Mike. You know I do. He's the epitome of gut and determination, and he's just pure racehorse. He lays his body down every time. He's had, you know, he's a horse that's earned well over $1 million. He's done it the hard way. He's had so many near misses in really big races, especially on the dirt. And so it would be so nice to see Snappy get the job done today in a race that's going to be incredibly tough. And look, his last three starts, each one of those following the disappointing performance in the Clark, have just been really game efforts. The fifth season in particular over a muddy racetrack at Oaklawn was just heartbreaking. You know, he did so much of the heavy lifting in that race. And so he comes off a really game performance in the Essex, also over a sloppy racetrack. I think the cutback in distance certainly isn't going to hurt him any. And he's going to have a new rider on his back for the first time, and Florent Giroux, who, of course, is more than capable and I think will be an exceptional fit for Snapper. And, you know, hopefully today's the day that he crosses over and gets the big win.
You know, he's one of only three millionaires in this race later this afternoon. People may not realize that Snapper Sinclair has earned $1.2 million in his career. He's won 5 of 23 starts, and he's been, as I said, knocking on the door in many other races. And he always seems to show up. And that, to have a horse like that, Jeff, you said you loved him, but to have a horse like that that you only paid, and I say only, paid $180,000 for, to now be a millionaire, that has to be really special.
You know, for any horse to reach that seven-figure mark is a big accomplishment. And you know, like I said earlier, Snapper Sinclair, he's really done it the hard way, and he's just been so incredibly versatile, too, in terms of his willingness to shift to multiple locations. His turf stats are incredibly strong. Obviously, he's a horse that a lot of those earnings came running in those big pots at Kentucky Downs, where he's a multiple winner, including his most recent win there in the Tourist Mile. Just a fun horse to be around. He has a huge personality. He's got that big white face. He's by one of my all-time favorite stallions, City Zip. And, you know, sometimes people forget, too, this horse has been going quite a while, and he, like I said, he always shows up. He was the bubble horse for the Kentucky Derby a couple of years ago as a three-year-old. I mean, he was the next horse in, and actually, even had he got in, we had decided that we were going to give him a little breather in the race prior to the Kentucky Derby. So, but it was kind of fun, you know, to know that Snapper Sinclair was actually the next horse in for the Kentucky Derby 2 years back.
Yeah, pretty special horse, and good luck with him today. He's 10-1 on the morning line. You said this is probably the toughest spot that he's been in, and you're talking about a horse that ran in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile at Santa Anita last year. So this is a salty race, and we'll see if Snapper can pull it off. How's the big girl doing, Midnight Bisou?
She could not be doing any better, Mike. We're just over the top excited about how she came out of her incredible performance in the Saudi Cup. And so she came back right after that race. As you know, originally we had thought about keeping her over there and heading over to Dubai. And now when you look back at the way things unfolded, what a great decision and how fortunate we were to decide to bring her back over here with how things changed so quickly. And when she came back after her short quarantine in Chicago, we shipped her straight to Keeneland, where horses were still being allowed to ship in. So it really worked out well from a timing standpoint. She got plenty of opportunity to just kind of kick back, be a horse out there and graze. And she's been back in regular training now for a little while. And talking to Steve Asmussen the other day, he's just getting ready to kind of kick up the notch a little bit and get her back into, you know, her speed work, if you will. She's had a few open gallops, but she's been training daily. She's carrying great weight. She's happy. She looks good. And now it's just a matter of, well, okay, what do you do next? And really the plan for us right now is we've got the Breeders' Cup at the end of the year. We're gonna focus on winning the Breeders' Cup. How we get there, that's really what we're going to focus on right now. And as you know, so much is up in the air in terms of race plans, but my expectation would be very early summer, hoping that things get somewhat normalized when we'd see her back in the starting gate.
Yeah, there are so many things that still need to be sorted out, so many questions that still need to be answered. And it, you know, from an owner's perspective, Jeff, it's not, and you're coming off of a year that was a banner year for Bloom Racing Stable, and you're trying to carry that momentum on like everybody here in 2020, and it's been a very difficult start to the year. But it's not just about the horses of racing age that you have in training now. You also have two-year-olds that are getting ready to get their career started, and they really can't. It right now, this is a time when Keeneland would be rolling and we'd be watching all these 4.5 furlong baby races, and you just don't see them right now. So from an owner's perspective, number one, talk about the challenges that you're going through and how you're facing and meeting those challenges.
You're right, Mike. I mean, there's a lot of anxious moments right now, in particular when you discuss the young horses, all the two-year-olds, they would all be moving to their destinations that would be getting them set up to get go into the races, and that includes places like Keeneland, Churchill Downs, and various other destinations across the country. And everybody is in just an incredible holding pattern right now, and so it's tricky from the standpoint of you want to keep these horses in a position to where they're continuing to move forward, but you don't have any definitive game plan in place in terms of when they need to be ready. So hats off to the folks that look after our horses in terms of keeping them healthy and happy. And, you know, we're not alone. Everybody's in the same boat in terms of when are we going to be able to ship some of these horses around. what decisions can be made as to, you know, the timing of all of this happening. And we also are involved in pinhooking, as many other organizations are. And so, you know, the disruption of sales has really thrown a wrench in the equation in terms of, you know, making sure that you have these horses ready at the right time. But look, we're dealing with it the way everybody else is. It's a very fluid situation. You try to manage things as best as possible, recognizing that you may miss a sale or two, and also you may miss race opportunities, but you just have to hold on and hope that this gets better sooner than later, and everybody stays healthy, and you go from there. But it's certainly very, very providing some anxious moments, and also the helplessness of not being able to interact on a daily basis with the horses is the hardest part. That's really the part I miss more than anything, is just being able to be back there and doing things and being around the horses.
Yeah, for you, the adjustment is huge because you are always on the road. You're either going to look at your young horses at a farm, or you're at a horse sale, or you're going to the races to see your horses run. So I can understand when you say that, one of the hardest working guys that I know in the sport of thoroughbred racing. And there's a lot of hardworking people in this sport, but Jeff, you bust your tail, and all that success is because of your hard work. So hats off to you, my friend. I know this has to be difficult for you and for so many owners across the board. We're thinking of you guys, and we'll get through it, man. It'll happen. We'll come out the other side, and things will be back to normal at some point very, very soon, I'm sure.
Well, look, you're right. I appreciate the kind words very much. And, you know, we're all in this together, and there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and all of us are looking forward to some sense of normalcy. And fortunately for those of us in the industry, this game provides so much joy and opportunity for all of us. And so hopefully sooner than later, we're back to normal.
I joked with you at the beginning of the interview about spending a full day with you. I'll spend a day with you anytime you want, man. We have a lot of fun when we get together. But how about for you? If you could spend a full day with one person in racing, past, present, who would it be?
You know, I'm like, I'm going to go with Charlie Whittingham. You know, I actually worked for Charlie for a year as his work writer, but my interactions with Charlie were limited in terms of, you know, brief conversations prior to and getting off of horses. So I would love to be able to just spend an actual full day picking Charlie's mind and watching him go through the process, the machinations, the methodology, the thought process that he had in terms of being so successful with so many different types of horses for so many years. So for me, it would be Charlie Whittingham spending a full day. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's a great answer, and I'm going to read as many of the answers to that, as many of the responses to that question as I can at the end of the program in our final segment, so stay tuned for that. Jeff Bloom, Bloom Racing, with me here on HRN. Jeff, as always, appreciate the visit. Stay safe, stay healthy, and say hello to the entire family for me.
Likewise, my friend. Thanks so much.
All right, and good luck with Snappers and Claire coming up later today in that Oaklawn Mile. Ed Bowen is going to join me in the next segment. We'll look back on the career of the great Spectacular Bid. 40 years ago, 1980, he was named Horse of the Year and Champion Older Male. We'll celebrate Spectacular Bid next on the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-Mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a V-Mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake V-Mesh Horse Fence by visiting redbrand.com.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Pin Oak Studs Alternation is a top 10 third crop sire by earnings, black type winners, and graded stakes winners. With nearly $7 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by six black type horses in 2019. From a second crop, three-year-old daughter Serengeti Empress won the 2019 Grade 1 Kentucky Oaks and was runner-up in both the Grade 1 Test and Acorn Stakes. Serengeti Empress finished the year with a strong third to older mares in the Breeders' Cup Distaff and is a finalist for Eclipse Champion three-year-old filly. By Distorted Humor, millionaire graded stakes winner Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
The National HBPA is a coalition of over 30 individual affiliates in the United States and Canada, comprised of thousands of thoroughbred owners, trainers, and breeders, committed to the positive future of thoroughbred racing while working to increase its popularity and uphold the highest standards of welfare and integrity. Stop by to visit CEO Eric Hamelback at the National HBPA headquarters in Lexington, Kentucky, and see what the HBPA is doing for you.
Hi, I'm Kayla Stratt, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
And it's spectacular. It's taking the lead by a length and a half. Along the inside, General Assembly is second. Flying Face to drop back on the outside. Gold Neck coming on, but there's a 16th of a mile to go, and Spectacular Bid is going to win the 101st running of the Kentucky Derby. Spectacular Bid doesn't run Franklin aboard. General Assembly second under the wire. After that, it was Golden Act and King Celebrity. So about seventh around the clubhouse turn, Ronnie Franklin made a big move with the bid on the far turn and on to victory. Time on the board, 2:02.25.
Dave Johnson with the call of the 1979 run for the Roses, Spectacular Bid. Wow, what a career for Spectacular Bid, the Hall of Famer. 26 wins in 30 lifetime starts. He was also second twice, third once. He earned more than $2.7 million in, I mentioned, Horse of the Year, Champion Older Male in 1980, 40 years ago, inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1982. And joining me now to look back on his career and tell a few stories about the bid is racing historian Ed Bowen. And Ed, good morning. And wow, I mean, that race call there really takes you back, doesn't it?
Good morning. Yes, it really does. That was a very exciting spring, and the incomprehensible aspect of it, that's still incomprehensible, is that it looked like we were going to have three straight Triple Crown winners, and after so many years of a drought being broken in 73 by Secretariat, a Spectacular Bid came along, and right after Seattle Slew and Affirmed and won it. And by the time of the Belmont, he was so heavily favored, it was just, you were just accepting the fact that, okay, there's going to be three straight Triple Crown winners.
Yeah, in 1979, I will not pretend to be an expert on Spectacular Bid by any stretch of the imagination. I was 8 years old in 1979, so I really don't remember
Spectacular
Bid on the racetrack.
I was probably 10. I was 10 or 11, but covering it for the Blood Horse. So.
Yeah, I kind of thought maybe you were right in that same ballpark. When I say the name Spectacular Bid, Ed, what made him so good? What are some immediate things that come to mind?
He just had that magical combination of grace of motion and natural speed and a desire that great horses have. I remember Buddy Delp, who had been such an achieving horseman for many years, but that never had a big horse like that. And he told me once, he said, I always just wondered what it was about about a great horse that was that made them great. And even though he was going through the experience, it was just not one of those things that you can just describe very, very well. But Spectacular Bid was he was very well named. He was spectacular, and he went on from that. He failed in the Triple Crown, the very controversial and bizarre explanation of having stepped on a safety pin in the stall, which has been debated and verified fairly well. But if the 40-year anniversary, of course, is of his four-year-old year, which was really, really just spectacular, to pun intended. In those days, the American racing still was graced by a lot of importance on handicap racing, which I'm sorry that has faded. But by in an era when you expected your top horses to run in a lot of handicaps and carry a lot of weight and give weight, the thought of an undefeated campaign was just not something you came up with. And so when he went 9-0 in 1980, the point of comparison was to go back to 1953 when Tom Fool, also a great handicapper, had been undefeated at four. He actually went 10-0, but Spectacular Bid going 9-0 was a tremendous achievement. And among the things that really just made it even more unique, if you can use that word, with comparative sense, there was a really nice horse on the West Coast named Flying Paster. They've been running against since his three-year-old year. And at four, Ben Ritter, who was sporting owner of part of the Knight Ritter newspaper chain, he ran Flying Paster to challenge Spectacular Bid four times in a row, and Spectacular Bid beat him sort of handily each time. And in that series was the Charles H. Stroob Stakes, in which Spectacular Bid ran a mile and a quarter in 1:57 4/5. And I checked the Equibase figures yesterday, and that still holds, stands up as a North American record for a mile and a quarter on dirt, and to say a track record, an American record that stood for 40 years is really, really remarkable. And we all know that there's a lot of things that go into the time of a race, including the track condition, the strategy, the pace, and so forth. But still, a mile and a quarter and under to in 1:57 4. That is still a an American record is remarkable.
Looking back on the career of Hall of Famer Spectacular Bid with racing historian and author Ed Bowen here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, Spectacular Bid certainly was special. You mentioned his late trainer, Buddy Delp, who had that famous quote, "the greatest horse to ever look through a bridle." Ed, yeah. Was he the greatest horse ever to look through a bridle?
I don't think so. And I remember Bill Knack, horse. Of course, Bill was a dyed-in-the-wool Secretariat fan, and he liked to say Spectacular Bid was the greatest horse ever to look through a bridle at Buddy Delp. At the end of the century, the Blood Horse put together, I'm sure you're aware, of a really good panel of journalists and racing secretaries, and they rated the top 100 horses of the century, and Spectacular Bid did slip into the top 10. He was number 10. He was between Seattle Slough and Tom Fool, whom I just mentioned. And one thing that, because of that connection of with the Triple Crown, even though Spectacular Bid didn't consummate it, it seemed that it was part of his career. So it's interesting to note that at that time, at the end of the century, there had been 11 Triple Crown winners, and he is rated above 7 of them and below 4. So even though he didn't finish the Triple Crown, he certainly seemed to be in that company at the time, and was gratified as being in that company when his career was finished.
when we heard the call of his Kentucky Derby victory in 1979, we heard General Assembly as the runner-up under Lafitte Pincai Jr. for Leroy Jolly. How good was the crop that Spectacular Bid was racing against in 1979 and beyond?
I think it was one of those situations where the leader of the crop did things easily enough that you could. One of the interpretations was that, gosh, he's not beating much if he's winning so easily. But I think that's tempered by the fact that, as I mentioned, Flying Paster was a very good horse, and General Assembly, of course, being by Secretariat and an early crop of Secretariat, got a lot of attention. He was a very flashy horse, and he had won. I think he won the Hopeful as a two-year-old, so he was a legit horse. And then he went on, and one of the most spectacular races ever in Saratoga was the General Assembly winning the Travers, by 12 or 15 lengths or something like that. So Spectacular Bid was racing against enough good horses that he shouldn't be criticized. And Coastal, whom beat him and won the Belmont, you could make the case that Coastal benefited from Spectacular Bid's problem with the safety pin. Later on, when the Spectacular Bid did what you expect a great three-year-old to do, and he challenged older horses, he was second to Affirmed in the Jockey Club Gold Cup, and it was in the Marlboro Cup later in the year that he beat General Assembly again. They were, of course, three-year-olds at even weights, and he won by 5 lengths. So that again indicates the quality of the horses that he was running against. And then in the Jockey Club Gold Cup, Spectacular Bid was second to Affirmed, and Coastal was third. So that again sort of kept ratifying that Spectacular Bid was feeding really good horses. And losing to Affirmed in the Jockey Club Gold Cup was just part of the sequence. I've always been taught that the cliche is a great four-year-old should be a great three-year-old. And Affirmed had his time as a three-year-old being beaten by the great four-year-old Spectacular, the Seattle Slough. And then at four, Affirmed was the great four-year-old. It was his turn to be the great four-year-old, and he beat the great three-year-old Spectacular Bid. So it was a very formful type of conclusion of that racing season. And then, of course, Spectacular Bid came back so, the next so good. Year. Spectacular Bid, unfortunately, had a little health problem and was retired early in the fall of his four-year-old year. He had won all those 9 races, culminating with the Woodward, which was a walkover. One of the odd things that used to happen fairly often in racing, but it's really, really unusual. And I love the fact that this chart caller, his job was to call it as he saw him, and for the race in which Spectacular Bid had no opposition, just galloped around. The chart noted he won it in hand.
Yeah, he was a special horse. That was a special time for thoroughbred racing.
Excuse me, go ahead.
No, I was saying that he was a special horse, and that era, that was such a special time for thoroughbred racing.
It really was. And also in 1980, it didn't really have anything to do with Spectacular Bid's career, but that was the year that Genuine Risk became the second filly ever to win the Derby after 65 years between Regret and Genuine Risk. But Spectacular Bid, among the really dramatic races he had, he carried up to 132 pounds, carried 130 pounds like 4 or 5 races in a row, and he won the Haskell at 132 over Gloria Song, giving her 15 pounds in actual weight. Of course, she was a female and would have gotten an allowance from being a female, but she was an older mare and very, very tough mare from Canada that was Eclipse Award winner in this country, as well as being the Horse of the Year in Canada. So he was, he continued to be challenged by weights. He won the Californian by four lengths over under 130 pounds. He'd won the Marvin Leroy under 132 pounds as well, and he won the Santa Anita Handicap, the last of that series against Flying Pastor. He won by five lengths under 130 pounds and giving 7 pounds to Flying Pastor. So he was a remarkable horse that he never had a down period in his career. The Belmont was an anomaly probably, but he didn't have any down phase. And that was particularly, I was always interested in that because I always thought Affirmed had the most nearly perfect career, being a brilliant two-year-old, a Kleist Triple Crown winner, and then a champion handicapper at four. But the firm did undergo a five-race losing streak, starting with the Marlboro Cup when he was beaten by Seattle Slough in the first meeting of Triple Crown winners. But Spectacular Bid never had any phase like that. He was, and that probably is, would account for him being rated 10th by those that panel of experts, 10th, with Affirmed 11th in that discipline of voting the best horses of the century.
You know, Ed, you mentioned the weights, 130, 132 pounds, and as we know, those days are long gone. We're not going to see handicap races like we used to see in those types of races. Can we compare modern-day horses who go on these winning streaks and win these same historic races to the horses of the past? Can we accurately compare them, considering the fact that the horses in the past were carrying so much more weight than the horses do today?
I think that is to the detriment of racing in general and then to the reputation of the horse. I've been on the Hall of Fame selection committee for 35 years, and over that period of time, it has been something that I've had to, in my own opinion, grapple with. You don't want to penalize a horse because you venerate an era that tested horses more than he was tested, than the current horse was tested, but you also don't want to just stand back and say, well, that's the era of today, and I'm not even going to reflect on the differences of the era. So it's complicated, but I do think that it means, in my mind, my ability, my tendency to venerate a horse that goes on a winning streak and races it as an older horse but never gives away weight, that does enter into my evaluation. I think that there are several great things about handicap racing. One is it tested America's best horses in a way that other countries didn't test a horse. Now, in France, the older males will carry 132 pounds, but that's weight for age. They're not giving away weight to other older males, but at 132 pounds, giving away 7 or 10 pounds to a horse in this country. I think it gave an extra imprimatur of class and gallantry to America's best horses. It also, from the business standpoint, it could turn a very non-interesting betting proposition into a good race to bet on. If you've got, I think of Cigar winning 16 in a row. If he still was carrying over 130 pounds, for him to be in a four-horse field at weight for age, it was sort of a ho-hum betting proposition. But for him giving away 10 or 15 pounds, like Spectacular Bid had done, it makes those races a better win-place show bet. Now, I grant you that in the modern era with so many gimmick wagers that the ease of spotting the winner doesn't eliminate the viability of the betting proposition when you've got picks, when you've got trifectas and so forth. But that is, I do think that that's a slight detriment to American racing, that horses don't do that anymore. And speaking of that, I was very impressed that that latest book on Spectacular Bid is about Peter Lee, and it's called Spectacular Bid, The Last Super Horse of the 20th Century. And I heard him give a talk at Keeneland not long ago, and his justification for calling Spectacular Bid The Last Super Horse is that because of that complete career, I think Cigar certainly ranks as a super horse in my mind. But in Peter Lee's decision, I think he felt that since Cigar developed later, didn't go through the Triple Crown process, that was a justification for calling Spectacular Bid a super horse and not a Cigar. And I'm making the presumption that when Peter Lee made that used that comment about the super horse, he's not including the fillies that raced in that era. So it's an interesting process to, and those opinions are, I guess, the old cliche of opinions is what makes horse racing, is really comes into play there. And of course, the other book on Spectacular Bid was by Tim Capps, who was a friend of mine, and probably yours, was a very good editor and writer, and then later was the professor at that wonderful school for horse racing at the University of Louisville. And of course, Tim passed away not too many years ago. But so Spectacular Bid has had two books written about him, and deservedly so.
Yeah, Ed Bowen with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Ed, up against the break, so I'll have to let you go, but I could spend the full hour talking with you about some of these horses of the past, and we'll do it again. We'll have you back on, and we'll look back and remember the careers of so many of the greats. And by the way, when it comes to Cigar, just remember, you never would have heard of Cigar if Holy Bull stayed healthy. So that's my take on Cigar. But I was a big Holy Bull fan.
My wife and I used to live on Johnabel Farm, so Holy Bull was my neighbor for some years. So I'm glad you said that.
Ed, appreciate the visit, and like all of our guests who appear on the program, we'll get you a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, and really appreciate it. Stay safe and stay healthy.
Same to you. Thank you very much.
All right, Ed Bowen here on HRRN. All right, going to get to that break. When I come back, it's time for this week's edition of Calling All Three-Year-Olds, presented by Spendthrift, and I'll update the answers to today's question of the day. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Eclipse champion Blame. Ranked among the top stallions of his crop, Blame has sired over 50 stakes horses. His recent top performers include Kentucky Derby hopefuls Shotsky, winner of the Grade 2 Remsen Stakes, and rising star Nadal, a $700,000 juvenile purchase and winner of the Grade 2 San Vicente. Plus, recent Grade 1 performers Mississippi, Alandra, and Natalma Stakes winner Abscond. Outstanding value, outstanding results. Blame, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Adena Springs bred, raced, and developed Awesome Again and Ghost Sapper into important stallions. Now comes Ghost Sapper's best son, Shaman Ghost, bred, raced, and backed by the strength of Adena. A Hall of Fame runner like his sire and grandsire, Shaman Ghost captured the classic Queen's Plate at 3 en route to his Sovereign Award championship. At ages 4 and 5, Shaman Ghost made cross-country history as the only horse in the past 30 years to capture both the Woodward Stakes and Santa Anita Handicap.
Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile.
Shaman Ghost would go on to earn over $3.8 million with repeated success at the highest level. Additional graded wins include the Grade 2 Brooklyn Invitational, the Marine Stakes, and Pimlico Special, before defeating the likes of Keen Ice and California Chrome, went second to Arrogate in the inaugural $16 million Pegasus World Cup. Ghost Sapper's best son, Shaman Ghost, standing at Adena Springs, Kentucky. Look for his fantastic first yearlings at the sales in 2020.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology.
Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Spendthrift Farms' popular Safe Bet program is back for 2020, featuring freshman sires Brody's Cause, Cinco Charlie, and Hit It A-Bomb. Breed to one of these stallions and watch their first crop of two-year-olds have greatest stakes success on the racetrack this year, or you won't owe the stud fee when your foal is born in 2021. Serious deals on serious stallions, only at Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm. Call today to learn more, 859-294-0030, or visit SpendthriftFarm.com.
Hi, this is Steve Buttleman, the official bugler at Churchill Downs in the Kentucky Derby, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Basin is coming three wide, and they're into the stretch with Godzilla to catch. Here's Basin now running up alongside, and Basin drifting to the center of the track grabs the lead. Godzilla back into second, and then it's American Butterfly followed by Shoplifted, but it is Basin. Basin and Jose Ortiz are running away in the Run Happy Hopeful. And it was Shoplifted who got up for second in the last stride over Godzilla. American Butterfly was fourth.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, getting ready for our Calling All Three-Year-Old segment, presented by Spendthrift Farm. That was Larry Colmus with the call of last year's hopeful at Saratoga. Basin, a big win there, came back already in 2020. Didn't win, but he'll look to get back to the winner's circle for Steve Asmussen later today at Oaklawn Park in the Oaklawn Stakes for the three-year-olds. It's a really good race, and Basin going to have to overcome the inside post, but certainly looks capable. He has a lot of talent. Is he among Bobby Newman's top five in this week's edition of Calling All Three-Year-Olds? Let's find out.
They're all in line. And they're off.
Spendthrift Farm presents Calling All Three-Year-Olds with Bobby Newman.
Oaklawn Park takes center stage today. The $200,000 Oaklawn Stakes is the main event, and a stellar field was entered for the mile and an eighth affair. It's an important step for these three-year-olds, as the top three finishers get an automatic berth into the Arkansas Derby on Saturday, May 2nd, and the winner gets a guaranteed spot in this year's Preakness Stakes. A big field of 13 was entered, and six of the runners have already won stakes in their brief careers. Basin won the Grade 1 Hopeful as a two-year-old, and he returned off a layoff to finish third in the Rebel Stakes last out. He didn't have the cleanest trip that day and has every right to improve. Bob Baffert's Thousand Words is a multiple stakes winner in Southern California, but didn't fire his best shot when last seen in the San Felipe Stakes. This will be his first time racing away from his home base in California. Those two should vie for favoritism, but the race is really much deeper than that. Tayshawn comes off a resounding win versus softer competition, and he could be ready to tackle these tougher foes. Plus, there are up-and-comers Background and Farmington Road, both of whom seem to be improving with every start. Should be a great race. Speaking of the Arkansas Derby, the probables as of now include Nadal, Blackberry Wine, Wells Bayou, Three Technique, King Guillermo, Attachment Rate, Basin, Accession, Silver Prospector, and Charlatan. There are several others, including Maxfield and Gouverneur Morris, that are being considered too. Remember that Oaklawn's starting gate holds 14 horses max, and the top three from today's Oaklawn Stakes get in. So the other 11 spots will go to those entered with the highest career earnings. I'll be back with this week's top five list right after this word from Spendthrift.
Spendthrift Farms' popular Safe Bet program is back for 2020, featuring freshman sires Brody's Cause, Cinco Charlie, and Hit It A-Bomb. Breed to one of these stallions and watch their first crop of two-year-olds have greatest stakes success on the racetrack this year, or you won't owe the stud fee when your foal is born in 2021. Serious deals on serious stallions, only at Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm. Call today to learn more, 859-294-0030, or visit SpendthriftFarm.com.
This week's top five list of Derby contenders looks like this. Numbers 1 and 2, Authentic and Honor AP, the 1-2 finishers in the San Felipe, both searching for where they'll make their next starts. Number 3, Tis the Law, winner of the Florida Derby. He could show up in the Arkansas Derby on May the 2nd. Numbers 4 and 5, Maxfield and Charlatan, both pointing possibly to the Arkansas Derby as well. Maxfield, we haven't seen him since last year as a 2-year-old. And Charlatan, 2-for-2, undefeated, won a maiden race, won an allowance race, both in resounding fashion. That's your Calling All 3-Year-Old segment presented by Spendthrift, the Breeders Farm.
Yeah, a lot of things still to be determined as we make our way down the road to the first Saturday in May. And if you missed it, we are just 147 days, 9 hours, 0 minutes, and 18 seconds until the first Saturday in September and the Run for the Roses. September 5th is the new date for the Kentucky Derby. We'll see if Derby 146 goes off without a hitch on that particular day. Before I get to the answers to your answers to our Equine Forum question of the day, I want to tell you a little bit more about this cool idea that I have to give credit to our producer, Lee Delapina. It was his brainchild. We are creating an HRN Fantasy Derby broadcast. On what would be Derby Day, May 2nd, we are going to be broadcasting the first ever HRN Fantasy Derby, and we have met with so much great feedback with this idea that we are so excited about it. Our entire broadcast team will bring you a one-hour broadcast with this Fantasy Derby field. And if you ever wondered, you know, we hear this all the time, you know, which Steeler team was the best, which Cowboys team was the best, which New York Yankees team was the best. Well, now we get to find out which Kentucky Derby winner was the best in the HRN Fantasy Derby. And the field of 20 is set. We asked you to vote, and so many of you chimed in with your top five. We asked you to select which horses you thought would finish 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in a fantasy derby such as this, and you did. Not going to tell you the results, but I will tell you the field for the fantasy derby. These are in no particular order. We will do a post-position draw, which I'll be joined by Churchill and Keeneland Racing Secretary Ben Huffman to help me with that. It will be a full post-position draw that we're going to air the Saturday before the Fantasy Derby. The Fantasy Derby May 2nd. That means that the post-position draw will air on this program on April 25th. Myself and Ben Huffman, we will go through. Jude Feld will then come on and set the morning line. Who better to do that than the Pontiff of the Pick Four? And then Ed DeRosa from Briss will be with me to share his thoughts on handicapping the Fantasy Derby. So mark your calendars, Saturday, April 25th, for that Equine Forum. It's going to be a lot of fun. And coverage of the Fantasy Derby is presented by our friends at Claiborne Farm. So thanks to them for all their support of this broadcast, 5 to 6 Eastern, Saturday, May 2nd. All right, here's the deal. You can go to our website, horseracingradio.net/fantasyderby, and the 20 horses are there. But I'm going to read them for you very quickly. Affirmed made the cut. No surprise there. Ellie Sheba, American Pharaoh, Animal Kingdom, Barbaro, California Chrome, Citation, Count Fleet, Funny Side, Justify, Mind That Bird, Northern Dancer, Seattle Slough, Secretariat, Spectacular Bid, Sunday Silence, Swale, War Admiral, Whirlaway, and the Philly Winning Colors. That's your field for the Fantasy Derby. Again, post positions will be drawn on Saturday, April 25th, right here on this very same program, the Equine Forum. You can go to our website now. If you go to horseracingradio.net, Briss has been kind enough to provide us with those past performances for all of the horses that will compete. Again, not in any particular order at this time, but you can go there. You can download PPs. This is going to be a lot of fun. Our entire broadcast team bringing you coverage of the HRN Fantasy Derby presented by Claiborne Farm. Head over to our website now and check it out. Going to be pretty awesome. All right, results of the question of the day. I asked you on our Twitter feed, if you could spend one full day with one person in racing, who would it be? And we have received so many answers. I'll try to get through as many as I can here in the next couple of minutes before I have to get to this final break. But great call here. Barbara Livingston, of the daily racing form. Somebody saying here, Scott saying that I think DRF Livingston must have some unbelievable stories. And yeah, she probably does. Bob Baffert getting a vote. Del Hancock. Yeah, that would be a good one. The Big A, Anthony Stabile. I'd loved it one more day with Alan Jerkins. I'm sure a lot of people would. Bob Baffert, another vote for him. Linda Rice, Tom Durkin has gotten some love in this poll. Steve Cawthon, Liz Crow at a sale. That's a good one. Acacia Courtney, the little A. Why not? Ron Turcotte, Chuck Simon, trainer Chuck Simon getting a vote here. Brittany Erton, Steve Asmussen, Robertino Diodoro, Angel Cordero. Secretariat, not a person, but that would be cool to spend a day with Secretariat. I would love that. Ernie Munich. You know, if we're going to go that way, heck, I'll spend a day with Holy Bull. Derek Smith, Bob Baffert, another one. Dwayne Lucas, Joseph O'Brien, Christina Blacker, another one for Barbara Livingston. Mike Smith. Mike Smith would be a great one. Here we go. Anyone at HRRN. About time. I was waiting to see if anybody gave me a write-in vote or something, and I guess this is the closest I'm going to come. So anyone at HRN, I guess I'll be anyone. Thanks, Steve, for that. And then Richard Mandela getting a vote in here too. But, yeah, keep them coming. If you could spend one full day with one person in racing, who would it be? At HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. One final break. I'll come back and wrap this one up. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown.
Power.
Anchor Down has built a five-length lead with just a 16th to the finish. Anchor Down wins the Westchester.
Passion.
Anchor Down is still there coming to the 16th pole. Tamar Coase can't get by him. And Anchor Down wires the field in the Kelso.
Performance.
Gainsway Stallion Anchor Down, a son of three-time champion sire Tappet and a top miler who won the Grade 2 Kelso with a final time of 132 and 4 fifths, posting a 108 buyer speed figure. A half-brother to Grade 1 winner Sweet Lulu, Anchor Down strongly resembles his sire, and buyers agree. At the recently concluded OBS March sale, a two-year-old colt by Anchor Down breezed in 9 4/5 seconds, selling for $270,000 to John Ford. Brilliantly fast, Anchor Down, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the FIPS in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
When it comes to buying tractors, mowers, and farm equipment, look no further than locally owned Central Equipment on Red Mile Road in Lexington. A third-generation family business, Central Equipment has been servicing the equine industry for more than 46 years, working closely with the NTRA to ensure their equine clients get the best pricing on their new John Deere purchases. At Central Equipment, you'll find top brands like Exmark, Kubota, Still, John Deere, and Woods. Stop in today and experience the family-owned atmosphere or visit centralequipment.com.
Thursday evenings, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, is the Brisnet.com call-in show. It's your chance to call in and let the Horse Racing Radio Nation know what's on your mind. Call us at 888-966-HRRN and discuss the topics you choose in the world of thoroughbred racing. The Brisnet.com call-in show, every Thursday, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, on Sirius 219 and XM 201, or streaming live online at horseracingradio.net.
Hi, this is Chris McCarron, and you're listening to the best horse racing show on the radio on Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Hey, don't forget to inside the April 11th issue of Blood Horse Magazine and Tablet. You won't want to miss these feature stories, including Home Base. That's a story about Mark Cassie and his training center, providing the perfect setting for trainers and their program. Clearview, as the Jockey Club steward for NYRA, Jennifer Durenberger, brings her perspective. And then one foal, one starter, one winner. Delta's royalty carries the legacy of Royal Delta. Pretty cool stuff. You can download a copy of Blood Horse magazine and tablet today at the App Store or Google Play. And don't miss their special Long Road to the Kentucky Derby going on now for 12 weeks only. You can do that at bloodhorse.com/TC. My thanks to all of our guests for making this show possible. Al Stahl Jr., Dustin Fabian, Jeff Bloom, and Ed Bowen, and plus so many other features that were part of this program, including all of you for taking the time to weigh in on our question of the day. My thanks to our producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington, Kentucky studios, Chauncey for handling all of our social media. Everybody stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll talk to you next week here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening, and as always, go Steelers!